we present the news quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello and welcome to the news quiz. As with everyone this week, the tragic events in Manchester on Monday night are in all of our minds. There's nothing funny to be said about it. We send our hearts out to the victims and their families. And we're going to try to make some jokes about the rest of the week's news. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Jeremy Hardy and stand-up comedian Susie Ruffle. And opposite them on my left, Holly Walsh and Andrew Maxwell. So now, a cutting from the Royal Academy of Arts magazine's classified ads, read by Susan Ray.
For rent, chic, elegantly restored 18th-century holiday home in Medina. Four double bedrooms, seductive bath and housekeeper.
Our thanks to Wendy Sudbury for sending that in. Jeremy, who's found maintaining her position a little taxing?
This is Theresa May and the unravelling of the Conservative manifesto. I wondered why the Conservatives finally came round to plain cigarette packaging, and now I realise it's so they've got more room to work out their policies on. And the U-turn this week is very much about the rising cost of looking after our ageing population. And in the manifesto, they were very clear that they would cut winter fuel payments, that Theresa May is hoping the winter will be her ally in reducing the ageing population. In fact, before antibiotics, pneumonia was known as Theresa's friends. But she was very clear last week that you won't have to sell your home, she'll just seize it while your children are at the funeral. But it's all very much to do, the U-turn is to do with the cap. Last week in the manifesto, there was no cap on care costs for our ageing population. And Jeremy Hunt said, no, there's no cap. But Damien Green, the Workhouses and Pensions Secretary, said there's no cap. And then Theresa May said, no, there is. No, there is. And everyone said, no, there isn't. She says, yeah, it's in the manifesto. They said, no, it's not in there. She said, yes, well, if you read between the lines, it's implicit.
So, like, she refused to accept that the party was doing a U-turn. I mean, it's very bad form, isn't it, to pretend to forget something that's been dubbed as dementia tax? If she had just repeated it every day at the same time for 2 weeks.
Yeah. There was a moment in the Andrew Neil interview where she said, you're not my niece.
She said, it's not a U-turn, it's a clarification. Just like I did a clarification on the A3 when I saw some traffic coming up.
But why are we surprised? I mean, she's gone back on literally everything that she said, refused to call a general election until she knew how good her polls were. I mean, that's like when you were at school and you'd check that someone fancied you before you asked them out.
Yeah.
That's how I'd do it. After some extensive polling, I fancy you.
Which then leads to some extensive polling.
That is very much what we're here for.
That's very
What? People do keep praising Theresa May, though. People saying, well, I think she's prime ministerial. She looks like a prime minister. No, she doesn't. She's only prime ministerial because she's called the prime minister. You don't say anyone is prime ministerial until they are the prime minister. I mean, Cameron just was a chinless pudding in sort of flip-flops. Then he became the prime minister. You never call people prime ministerial unless they are the prime minister. You wouldn't say, you know that bloke at the petrol garage? Not the one with the beard, the prime ministerial one. It's just not an expression that you use about people, is it? I mean, and lots of prime ministers haven't been prime ministerial. Attlee wasn't prime ministerial, but nonetheless got a lot done. And Churchill wasn't prime ministerial. He was Churchillian. That's how he got the name.
What other big issues did Andrew Neil accuse the Prime Minister of failing to deliver on?
We don't know. We're not pundits, Miles. We're just people who sneer at things. Journalists who have to stay up till 1 a.m. to tell people what's on the front of the newspaper in a few hours because they're so excited they can't sleep.
All right, well, let's look for easier questions. No, Michelle, these are the latest antics of Theresa May, who this week executed a U-turn on the proposed dementia tax, although she was at pains to point out this isn't a U-turn, it's not a dementia tax, and this is merely a cap being proposed, even though a cap was previously explicitly ruled out, and she remains a Prime Minister who is not afraid to make tough choices, except when she is, and she has no reverse gears. She is absolutely still going forward, it just so happens in the opposite direction. To be honest, it's enough to have you checking into a home. If you didn't know, you'd have to sell yours to pay for it. The U-turn is a blow for May, as it shows she's out of touch with the beliefs of some of her core voters, who were hoping to see Bring Back the Robertson Jam mascot front and centre of the manifesto. May was grilled on the subject in a tense interview with the BBC's Andrew Neil, which closely resembled the sight of two postmenopausal silverbacks fighting over who gets the next swing on the tyre. The Conservatives have changed their plans for free school breakfast from a costed to an uncosted policy. Apparently, they thought that 25 pence was enough to give a child a hearty breakfast, presumably because everything in the House of Parliament is subsidised up to the eyeballs. For 25p there, you can get a full English, an assortment of pastries, some smoked meats that nobody touches, and still have enough cash left over for an over-the-blouse fumble in an underpass. It's all on the taxpayer. 2 points to Jeremy. Susie, who's had a very small surge?
This is the story that the Labour Party surged in Wales this week. It briefly looked like the Conservatives might have a chance, but then after the release of the manifesto, Wales is back for Labour. I couldn't believe that this was a story. I mean, like, stop press, Labour wins Wales, also the Conservative Party have won Henley-on-Thames and the Greens have Brighton. I mean, in other news, my mum still puts her phone to the ear when using FaceTime. I mean, it's not... It's not really news. My problem is, I think, when push comes to shove, I don't think the Welsh voters would have voted Tory. So many grandparents would turn in their grave, it could cause an earthquake on the Brecon Beacons. And it's also worth noting that this week, an extra 1 million under-25s have registered to vote. And there's been an extra push from, like, celebrities and musicians this time, which is quite unusual. A UK grime artist called Stormzy has sort of very proudly backed Corbyn. And I like that, because I don't think it ever happens here. Like, in the States, it's very common for celebrities to align themselves with the party, like, you know, Jay-Z and Beyonce were very Barack Obama, Cher and George Clooney backing Hillary, Hulk Hogan and Lucifer backing Donald Trump.
Well, it's weird, though. Wales is not as left-wing as you think it is. There's a big bit in the middle that's very, very UKIP. I mean, that UKIP did quite well in the last elections. And if you drive through mid-Wales, it is quite UKIP-y. It's all breathtaking views and no sign of civilisation. I think it's brilliant, though, that Jeremy Corbyn's got all these celebrity supporters and he's got absolutely no idea who any of them are.
Someone asked him whether he listened to grime music. And he was like, yeah, love that. Can't get enough of the stuff. I just want to see him now coming out of Brixton Academy at, like, 2 a.m. Like, oh, yes, I love it.
Do you think musicians will come out, you know, for, I mean, we have sort of chamber orchestras for May and that sort of thing.
The Irish, the Scottish and the Welsh are all thrown into the same Celtic bin. But look, you're all Celts. We're nothing like them.
No, they but are. You do all walk into the same pub and then something happens.
Psychosomatically, this is the latest news from the Labour Party, who are surging ahead in the polls all the way to a whopping average of 33%, confounding the naysayers and leading to growing optimism among Labour activists that the party could pull off the seemingly impossible and manage a miserable defeat rather than the much-anticipated total annihilation. Labour have received a 16-point boost in Wales, going ahead of the Conservatives after the entire population of the country woke up one morning and spontaneously remembered the 1980s. Over a million under-25s have now registered to vote, and it'll be nice for them to head to a polling station, which will almost certainly be their former school, and see their former teachers, now unrecognisable and hollow after a decade of institutional reform and spending cuts, before they enthusiastically vote for more of the same. Who's destined for failure now, Mr McClaverty? The...
Let it go, Mike.
The boost in young voters may be good news for Jeremy Corbyn, as many 18 to 25-year-olds are thought to back Labour, with the obvious exception of the ones who go on University Challenge wearing bow ties. Also this week, Theresa May has suggested introducing voter ID in order to combat electoral fraud, although it'll do nothing to deal with the gangs of intimidating 14-year-olds loitering outside polling stations, saying to any passing grown-ups, "Hey, mister, will you go in and vote for Tim Farron for us?" I know your dad. 2 points to Susie. Holly, who took the whole family on holiday this week?
Oh, well, this is Trump, who is currently travelling around the world with all the delicate international diplomacy of a swine flu epidemic. I love this. It's like National Lampoon's Middle Eastern Vacation. It's crazy. So he's done Saudi Arabia, then Israel, which he didn't realise was in the Middle East, then Vatican City, then up to Brussels for lunch with the French Prime Minister, and then back down to Sicily. So that's I don't know who his tour manager is, but that is a bad that's a bad schedule. I mean, I wish my relatives went on holiday and sent me back pictures as good as the ones that are coming back from this trip, because for starters, there's that incredible photograph of him holding the orb with the is it the Egyptian Prime Minister and a Saudi king? Is that who it is?
Yeah, Egyptian dictator and the king of Saudi Arabia all holding a weird orb, lighting their faces up like some sort of weird black mass, which nobody could quite explain.
I was just so hoping it was one of those Van de Graaff generators and that someone would turn it up and his hair would just stand up. The person's face I've enjoyed the most on this whole trip is the Pope. He has done nothing to hide the contempt in his face. It's impressive how he looks like me in every family photo from the early 90s, where I'm just so annoyed that I have to be photographed near my parents. But it's just wonderful. The Pope gave him a book of his writings, the Pope's writings, on the environment and peace. And Trump gave the Pope a printout of his Twitter feed. No, he didn't. He gave him Martin Luther King's collected writings, which is clearly given to him, and he's just trying to backhand it off someone else. He's never going to read that. He's like, what can we give him? Oh, let's give that present.
He probably didn't realise that Martin Luther King isn't the same as Martin Luther, founder of the Protestant faith.
Either way, it's pretty bad form. Hello, Catholic. Here's some Protestant writing. Just march around the Vatican while he was at it. Trump, honestly, how much longer? I mean, it's only been 100 days. Everything he says the next day, he contradicts. Everybody who trusts him, he betrays. The man is all gold tops and no toilet. A politician is meant to say or do something stupid once every, 6 months? And then we dine out on it. Like, every day, there's just... It's like the kaleidoscope of dick. It's just... slightly different. Can I say dick? What's the word you can say?
Oh, just shout it from the rooftops, then. Yeah.
Like, he was...
If you love it, say it.
He was interviewed and he was like, I didn't know being the president would be this hard. It's like going, oh, I didn't know being a coal miner would be this indoorsy.
There was a wonderful moment where he was meeting the Saudi king and the Egyptian one, and there was a line about it in the press about there was like an awkwardness about the fact that the Muslim ban had happened, and then he was going into their country, and that sort of awkwardness is very hard. I've sort of experienced that level of awkwardness when I was a teenager because I was a part of Reptile Club. I didn't have a lot of friends, and one day in an English class I was trying to sort of get in with all the cool kids. And I said, oh, you know, everyone that's in Reptile Club are massive losers. And, of course, it got back to Reptile Club. And I don't mind telling you that the iguana showing on Tuesday was very frosty indeed. So I really sympathised with Trump on that.
What kind of what did you have?
I wasn't allowed one. We had a poodle. So... Mum wouldn't let me have an iguana, so instead I went to Reptile Club on a Tuesday night. It was on the outskirts of Portsmouth in a porter cabin. It's quite surprising they let me go. I remember being there as a teenager, and there was a guy called Darren who was about 40, had a ponytail and a car and an iguana. And I remember thinking, Darren's got everything.
What happened to Darren, do you know?
I don't know, Darren, this is a call to you from Radio 4. Get in touch.
I found it very... The way with Trump, you don't... Normally, you get a sort of insight into him because he sort of relentlessly tweets, but he stopped doing that. We suddenly don't know what he's thinking. I don't know if that's...
Apparently, that has been deliberate on the people around him, his courtiers, or whatever the technical term is.
They sort of told him about roaming charges.
Apparently, no, it's been deliberate that they're keeping him relentlessly busy so he has no time to tweet. That's
do you
been
think
the
he's
actual...
got a fake phone? And they're like, yeah, that's been uploaded, well yeah. done.
In the American media, there's a big thing about how Melania and... what's her name? Ivanka.
I wonder what his Russian handlers make of the name Ivanka.
We told him a code name. He called his daughter after it. Yeah, but there was a massive thing of that they weren't going to cover their hair in Saudi Arabia. No way, we're not covering our hair, not covering our hair. And then went to the Vatican and dressed up like the Adams family. So odd. Like, this, you don't have
yeah,
to cover
so
your,
weird.
You don't have to cover your hair to meet the Pope.
I think we're going to look back at the fact that he was president in the same way that you look back at the fact that Sunita went out with Brad Pitt. In like 50 years' time, people will go, really? And they'll Google it and they'll go, God, that's true. That's so weird.
Bloomingly, these are the adventures of lovable rapscallion and occasional world leader Donald J. Trump, who this week went on his first foreign trip, exhibiting throughout all the dignity of an elderly dachshund whose quality of life would be described by a vet as experiencing varying degrees of prolapse. On Trump's inaugural world tour, he visited Brussels, Sicily, Saudi Arabia, Israel and the Vatican, playing mostly provincial art centres, a few jokes, a few stories, a song, and then he draws the raffle, you're all out by 11. He took the whole family with him, like a ghastly version of the Osmonds forged in the very depths of hell. Of course, Trump describes it as his first foreign tour. It looks to the rest of the world like somebody skipping bail. In a speech in Saudi Arabia, Trump accused Iran of fueling the fires of sectarian conflict and terror. Not so much a case of the pot calling the kettle black as a bastard calling some other bastards a bunch of bastards. In Brussels, Trump attended a dinner with the EU and enjoyed for the first time the experience of being only the second most unpopular world leader in the room. During their audience at the Vatican, both Melania and Ivanka wore ceremonial black veils, because if they wore white, the Pope would get confused and pass the ball to them. Trump also told the president of the Philippines the location of nuclear submarines in Korean waters. I mean, why not just tweet the damn nuclear codes and get it over with? It's the waiting I can't stand. 2 points to Holly. Andrew, what means trouble for the over-75s?
From now on, the over-75s, your years of freeloading are over. It's time to start really getting involved in society again. Paying your way, you've had a lot of fun riding around on the bus for free. Honestly, you look at the over-75s, how they live with their bus passes and their free TV licence and their use of the Methodist Church Hall whenever they want. This filthy grey horde have been living off us for years. They know where the library is. Where do they get those shoes? They're so comfortable. You want to stop them in the street, go, Malcolm, where did you get them? God, so many men in this country look like Paddy Ashdown. Living off us. They need to be crushed. They need to be crushed. And we need to get up earlier than, which is really hard to do. How are we going to do a dawn sweep against the over 75s? They were already up having a tinkle. Oh, God, they're everywhere.
So you think this is a good thing?
I don't know.
When you get older, you'll realise, Andrew.
Yes, of course we should be asking you, Jeremy.
Yes.
Now, is this fair, what they're doing to you?
But this is all to do with the TV licence, isn't it? The BBC has a unique and crazy way in which it's funded. Instead of being funded from general taxation, there's a poll tax, which is that you have to have a TV licence. But basically, old people will be means-tested as to whether they are entitled to have a free TV licence. But I don't know if that counts if you only turn the TV on to take the chill off the room.
With the licence fee is that people assume that the TV is then there for like their specific needs. Like, I don't know if people saw a little while ago in the most recent Doctor Who, the Doctor Who's assistant is a gay woman, and there were some people on Twitter that were really up in arms about it. One of them said, The BBC's gay agenda, first Holby, then Casualty, now Doctor Who. There's literally no straight people left. That was one of them. My favourite one was, I don't pay my licence fee for TV like this. TV is meant to be about normal people having normal lives. Like, mate, you're watching Doctor Who! Lord, who's fighting aliens and robots? Maybe the Doctor could take you back to where your opinions are from.
Yeah. I was like people being freaked out by the idea of a black James Bond. That would be crazy to have a black James Bond. Even though James Bond has been the same age for 50 years and changes heads every 4 or 5 years, if one of those heads was not white, that would be very hard to believe.
Percutaneously, this is the news that the BBC are considering plans to means-test free TV licences for the over-75s, which seems a little unfair, given that a lot of over-75s watch BBC One all day because it's the easiest way for someone to truly reconcile themselves to the prospect of death.
That is true. Bargain hunt is grounds for not resuscitating, I think.
The elderly are seen as more likely to pay their licence fee, as by the age of 75, Netflix and chill has largely been replaced by Radio 4 and rutting. Still, it's nice for once to know that members of the public could be suffering from the appalling decisions of BBC management rather than simply the people who work here. Older people already face means testing on their winter fuel allowance, meaning the BBC plans could close the loophole for those pensioners who are planning to rely on the warmth of Steve Wright's personality to get them through the next harsh winter. Of course.
He's a lovely man, Steve.
He's a nice,
right,
man.
In the
very
afternoon.
Nice man.
Very nice,
nice man. Yeah. He just happens to be in the joke, that's all. Of course, this all seems incredibly unfair to the elderly who, after a lifetime of free university tuition, affordable housing and final salary pensions, must surely be reaching the point when they can expect to get something back. 2 points to Andrew. And at the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Susie have 4 and Andrew and Holly have 5. We start round two with a text message received from the NHS.
Reminder, Barbourne Health Centre training afternoon is the 25th of May between 1 p.m. and 4 p.m. Areas will be manned by skeletal staff, so please avoid the surgery between these times.
Thanks to Paxley from Worcestershire for sending us that. Jeremy, have a listen to this. Oh, is this the way they say the future's meant to feel? Or just 20,000 people standing in a field? And I don't quite understand just what this feeling is. But that's okay, because we're all sorted out for reason with. Jeremy, who wants to know if they can get high off their own supply?
Very good. You've got your finger on the pulse, haven't you?
As
Lord
ever.
Jupp of Radio 4, sure. What it is, festivals, you're going to be able to get your drugs tested to make sure that they're safe. It's the sort of thing that the police say, that is a really good idea, and politicians say, that's a terrible idea. And the police say, can you just shut up and let us be the police? You can take your drugs in, and you don't have to give your name or address or be arrested, and they'll say, this is okay, this is actually a proper drug, high-quality stuff, but they won't give it back to you, the bit that they've tested. You only give them a little bit, I think. You don't give it all at all to them.
I like the idea that there's, like, a bloke that's testing them for them. Like, Dave's just in a room. Just like, like, yeah, this one's brilliant, do all of them!
I think...
Is that how it works?
I think there might be test tubes involved. I'm not sure.
It's a very sensible idea, of course. Hedonism, if only we could abolish it. But for some reason, people like pleasure. Until we can really sit them down individually, one after another, and go, now see here, this country's about to go through some very testing times, choppy national waters. So if you could possibly not get out of your mind, take your top off while writhing away to the latest disco beats.
Disco?
It's the latest thing from America. One day it'll get to you gay people too.
Are you a big festival person, Holly?
I went on a guide camp. Does that count? We took a lot of ecstasy, but that's a different story. I'm so prudish about drugs. I wouldn't know any. I was once at Glastonbury. I do did gig at Glastonbury quite a few times, and I saw a guy who was so mashed that he thought he was walking forwards, but he was actually walking backwards, and he couldn't understand why the stage was getting further and further away.
But Andrew had a great night. So.
Foppishly, this is the news that Festival Republic, organisers of many of this summer's biggest live music events, are hoping to provide on-site facilities for festival-goers to test their illegal drugs for purity. Personally, I always like to take a spoon and a lighter along with me to a festival, but then I love nothing more than split-pea soup on a paraffin stove. Still, it's refreshing to see that our society has moved on from the war on drugs and instead started waging the much more necessary war on rubbish drugs. There are worries that this will normalise drug use and we'll all be here in 6 months watching in fascinated horror as the newsreader honks yet another line off one of their cuttings. As a Radio 4 listener, you may be wondering who is going to avail themselves of this service. The answer, all of your insufferable offspring. 2 points to Jeremy. Susie, whose wedding got a middle ton of coverage?
This is the ridiculous coverage of Pippa Middleton's wedding at the weekend. So she married her fiancé, James Matthew, in like a posh country wedding at the weekend. Vogue was very into it. And as it was all happening, they were updating their Twitter feed with everything you need to know. Presumably you just click on the link and it's like, she got married. That's everything you need to know. They had a story which were what every bride could learn from Pippa Middleton, which is basically if you're rich enough to have your hair and makeup budget that could end austerity, you'll probably have a really nice day. A lot of people were saying, like, oh, it's the wedding of the year, but I can tell you, not according to my friend Karen. She had the wedding of the year in Portsmouth in January, and the WhatsApp group got to 3,000 messages. And Karen, like Pippa, married well. I mean, well by Portsmouth standards in that, I mean, he wasn't electronically tagged during the service. But...
Why is there all this excitement at the fact she's got a bottom? Because you think, well, of course she's got a bottom, otherwise she'd fall down the toilet. She's not in the royal family. I mean, she's sister-in-law to a prince and she's auntie to a prince and a princess. The royal family, you can imagine. I mean, you know, William, for the first time, married outside the family. That was a good call. Because normally it would be a cousin, and it's very likely you could throw up a buttockless child, given, you know, you get some strange fairground attraction that Victorians go and look at. Come and see the buttockless child.
The famous Habsburg rump.
Have you been gripped by it?
Gripped? My gosh. I saw that they're very upset, the married couple, because people have been selling their menus on eBay for about 500 quid. And they're very upset about this and they're threatening to sue. When I got married, I put everything on eBay afterwards, you know, just to recoup some of the costs, you know, like one bridesmaid slightly soiled, you know.
You know, like when people get married and they say, well, we already have everything we need, but we would welcome contributions towards our honeymoon. And you think, yeah, well, you can stuff that, can't you? No one buys you a holiday when you get divorced, when you could really do with a break.
I think there should be a deal where if you get... I have a friend who got married and she got divorced 6 months later. And a bit of me was like, get me my coffee grinder back. That is fair, because you haven't been married long enough to deserve that. I mean, that's well within warranty.
What do really posh people put? I mean, what do you give them? What do you give to people who have more than they could ever possibly want? Because everybody's got everything already, haven't they? They've been living together for years, people. You know, they get to about 35 and they think, well, I've pretty much done it with everybody else who'll let me. I better keep this one. They've already got all their belongings already. They've got utensils. They haven't been straining spaghetti through scalded fingers and grating Parmesan with their nails. So you have to go on the John Lewis website and get them the Waterford Crystal Lettuce Spoon Rest.
I always think it's nice to get people the gift of self-awareness.
If you get them a goat for an African village, that's always good. Because they're never going to go and check.
Extraterrestrially, this is the royal wedding in law of the year, as Pippa Middleton married hedge fund manager James Matthews. And we were all forced to read about it in every single newspaper until our eyes wept with what I can only assume was happiness. It sounded like a remarkable event. I rather suspect Prince Philip retired from public life purely in order to avoid having to sit through The seating plan was a nightmare. You try organising a singles table when absolutely everybody has descended from William the Conqueror. Prince George trod on the bride's train, got told off, and was pictured crying, capturing the defining moment of psychological trauma that will one day erupt into a 40-year reign of brutal tyranny. 2 points to Susie. Holly, who's been made to look ostentatiously pretty?
I have such strong feminist views about this story. This is Jane Austen.
She's hysterical, Andrew. Strike her.
Right you are, sir. You can't have that. That'll destroy the morale on the home front. No point bayoneting Jerry for the last 6 years to come home to all this.
Holly.
This is the story that Jane Austen is going to be featured on the £10 notes, which is a big coup, because obviously there aren't any other women on it apart from the Queen, but that doesn't count. But there's some hoo-ha because they feel that she's had her face airbrushed, that she looks a bit Disney-fied and she doesn't look quite as naturalistic as she might do. And this is based on the fact that there's only one surviving picture of Jane Austen that was done in her lifetime. And I think the best way to describe it is she has an incredible resting bitch face. She she looks like she's in a photo call with Donald Trump. This portrait was done by her sister, which says a lot. You know, like, if you asked my brother to draw a picture of me, it would definitely have a cock and balls on my forehead. So it's fair. Like, no one's sister is ever going to do a flattering picture of their sister. That's not how it works. That's not what sisters do to each other.
Is that one of the ways that the picture has been altered? Have they removed the cock and balls?
Yeah, they...
What is this country coming to?
I think it's fair to give her a good picture on a £10 note. I think that's a reasonable thing to do, to slightly, you know, improve her looks a little bit.
Send Charles Darwin, that picture of him on the money, that's not really what he looked like. He was an awful munter. Yeah, in his day, he was considered quite the man pig. They zhuzhed him up to make him look more sciencey and handsome.
Now, a man pig, is that a man that is part pig, Andrew?
It's you a managed, would want to have a nice picture. And wasn't the picture that they used one that was commissioned by her publisher for a posthumous publication?
It was actually, I think, drawn by her nephew about 40 years or so after her death.
Because, crucially, who is it that's actually made the fuss? It is the television historian Lucy Worsley, who, incidentally, has a book out very soon about Jane Austen. And I can't help but feel, and I'm not a cynical man... I can't help feeling it's connected in some way.
Most people look a bit rough when they've been on the £5 notes, though, don't they? Maybe it should be like you have the same person for each denomination of note, but you get more glamorous. You start looking a bit... a bit of a minger on the fiver, and once you get up to the 50, you're quite glamorous.
You're wearing a bikini and you're looking over your shoulder rather clearly.
Pride and Prejudicially, this is the news that a likeness of Jane Austen to be used on the new £10 note is not an accurate picture, but what has been described as a publicity portrait conforming to the norms of Georgian beauty. If only someone had taken the trouble to say to Miss Austen, put a bit of blippy on Jane, you're going to be on a banknote one day. While they're at it, they could have told the Bronte sisters to put their hands over their mouths when they cough. Still, you can't go back. Of course, it's not the first time that this has happened. That memorial fountain looks nothing like Diana. 2 points. Andrew, have a listen to this. Lovely. Andrew, who's fallen prey to a fat fraudster?
Now, this is the sorry, sorry tale of the New Zealand Navy. The New Zealand Navy have been taken in by a hookster by the name of Fat Leonard. I mean, look, the point is, I'm on Fat Leonard's side.
Right.
If they're stupid enough to have a Navy, they deserve to get taken down by Fat Len.
Well, Fat Leonard, whose side you're on, is currently imprisoned in the US for an enormous corruption and sex scandal. Of course.
He bribed people in the American Navy. He bribed admirals with sex parties so that they would give him information about their ships, and he could get them to get their ships into his ports where he would overcharge the US Navy. And one of the sex parties, it involved General MacArthur memorabilia. And it said in the paper, sex acts involving General Arthur memorabilia. And that's really irresponsible because it doesn't fill in the details, which means it's left to your imagination, which means you might imagine things far worse than the actual reality. It might just have been a lap dance wearing a General MacArthur baseball cap or lightly smeared in General MacArthur commemorative marmalade. But you're thinking figurines and Navy shells, aren't you?
No, what I'm thinking is, you know those big naval wheels which have, like, 11 different dildo-sized handles coming off them?
Yes, Holly.
Yeah, that's... Anyway... I like the fact that the New Zealand Navy said that it is
slowly spinning while people grip to it desperately. Make it go faster or we'll all fall off when it goes on the bottom. Come
on. It's an absolute disaster. I was on the bottom of the dildo whale. I absolutely love a Kiwi accent. It's so confusing. Every single vowel is moved around in the sentence. Is that a dildo? It's absolutely outrageous. It's so hard to talk dirty in a Kiwi accent, isn't it? I couldn't be more horny right now. Absolutely outrageous. I've had a crispy Braeburn and I've gone for a jog. I love New Zealand so much. I once saw this, it was long before, you know, there was a horrific earthquake in Christchurch a couple of years back. Terrible. But a couple of years before that, there had been another earthquake where nobody got hurt. It was just a bit of a rumble, right? I come in from a gig and I turn on the news, BBC News 24, like 3 a.m. after the motorway. Turn on the news and it's breaking news, earthquake in Christchurch. And they've clearly gone and stuck a camera in anybody's face. And they've got some old Christchurch Kiwi woman there. And they went, can you tell us what it's like there? And she went, oh, it's absolute devastation. And they're going, well, what? Can you tell us what's happened? And she went, a table of apples got tipped over.
Leonard is a peculiar nickname, though, isn't it? You'd expect someone to be called Fat Len, because if you're familiar enough to draw attention to someone's obesity, you'd think you wouldn't be formal enough to use the whole of their given name.
Yeah.
it's like, his name was Leonard Francis, so you go, like, Fatty Francis. I mean, like, Sir Nicholas Soames, you would call Fatty Soames. You wouldn't call him Fat Sir Nicholas, would you?
I was reading about it, but after talking about all the sex parties and the deals that they were doing, and it said the New Zealand Navy said that it had used a range of services in Singapore from bus hire to tug provisions. I mean, that sounds filthy.
All the clues were there for him.
Well, I think we're not giving Fat Leonard enough credit. It can't be easy trying to score business deals at an orgy. I mean, it's got to be all down to the timing. I mean, too early, people are going to be distracted. Too later, they'll be sleepy. There has to be a sweet spot where you interrupt. Admiral, if you wouldn't mind, join me on the poop deck.
I wish you hadn't said poop deck now.
Well, presumably, I mean, I do not know, but I do not. There's some sort of etiquette to these things, and there's a sort of chatty stage. Presumably after, I don't know, you start with sort of Prosecco and a bit of music and then probably, I don't know, maybe someone brings in some brownies they've made, something like that. Fatly, this is the story of the New Zealand Navy, who may have been taken advantage of by a fraudster known as Fat Leonard. Having already conned the US Navy out of $34 million, the shocking news emerged this week, firstly that New Zealand has a Navy, and that they in turn have paid Fat Leonard over $700,000. Fat Leonard used privileged information to overcharge the Navy to pump wastewater from their ships. It's amazing the length some people go to in order to do the things they love. One of the US naval officers involved in the case is actually called Rear Admiral Pimpo. which I believe is also the name of a character in the classic film Carry On Sex-Fueled Wastewater-Based Corruption. Well, if there's a different way to pay for access to a ship than throwing a sex party, I certainly haven't heard about it, and the folks at Brittany Ferries have not complained. Thank goodness our Navy hasn't fallen prey to Fat Leonard, although given the cuts to our defence budget, the most we could probably offer him was £30 in exchange for a knee trembler and a narrowboat. 2 points to Andrew. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting they'd like to share? Jeremy.
Patrick Thornbury saw these instructions on a tube of skin repair gel called Afterride, which is for use on the external genital area to soothe chafing and saddle sores. Usage, colon. Apply a thin layer of gel to the affected area. A lengthy massage is not required.
Susie.
Edith Lowe in Bath saw this on Gumtree. It's an ad for a used dartboard. Dartboard and darts for sale. Reasonable condition, but obviously some holes from darts.
Holly.
This is from Tim Husky and Anne and John Emerson from the Beverly Advertiser. It's just a huge headline. It says, care home demolition work will not begin until residents have moved out.
Andrew.
David Wolfson saw this online review for a new type of GPS system. Pros. Very lightweight. Highly affordable. Works all over the world. Cons. Not available.
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Jeremy and Susie have 9, but this week's winners are Holly and Andrew with 10. Before we leave you, here is an extract from an article in the Evening Standard.
A fire broke out earlier today on a building site near King's Cross. A spokeswoman for the London Fire Brigade said part of a wall was damaged and one person self-evacuated from the... Shall I try again? A fire broke out earlier... A fire broke out earlier today on a building site near King's Cross. A spokeswoman for the London Fire Brigade said part of a wall was damaged and one person self-evacuated from the cab of a 30-metre crane.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Susie Ruffle, Holly Walsh and Andrew Maxwell. In the chair was Miles Jupp, and the news was read by me, Susan Ray. The chair script was written by James Kettle, Ahir Shah and Danielle Ward, with additional material by Robin Morgan. The producer was Joe Nannery, and it was a BBC Studios production.